What is up, Daddy Gang? It is your founding father, Alex Cooper, with Call Her Daddy. Christine Quinn, welcome to Call Her Daddy.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. My father, my heavenly father.
It's so crazy to see you in person because we always see you on TV. And so I feel like I'm getting the exclusive look. She looks exactly the same, even better. The glasses, the outfit, the whole vibe. How did you pick this for today?
Well, I want it to be very like Matrix meets Balenciaga meets hooker vibes. That's what I was going for.
Love. You
in
did
the
it.
Best way possible.
It looks amazing.
Thank you.
So we were just talking before we started. Christine, you had DM'd me like years ago.
Yeah. It was like 2019, 2020. I've been following you for years. You were the only woman that I saw at the time that was going out there saying stuff that maybe wasn't popular, but was right and what was true, you know? And you, that for me is what resonated. Like, you resonated with me. I was like, this woman has power. She doesn't care what anyone else thinks. She will speak her mind. And I felt like you and I had an instant connection, even though I didn't know you. And I was like, low-key, like stalking you.
Like I was stalking you so hard. No, I relate to that. And thank you for that. Because I remember when I first saw you on Selling Sunset, which we'll get into, there are people that can absolutely be like taken aback by your character.
Yeah.
Because you are a very powerful person. Yeah. And or character, which we'll get into.
Yes.
But I do respect that you always speak your mind.
Yeah.
And I think that as women, there's something about us speaking our mind that can be very off-putting to some people.
Absolutely.
Because you're not used to a woman opening her mouth and being allowed and saying what she's thinking and not holding back. So,
I mean, think about when women were able to vote. You know, that wasn't too long ago. Think about everything that's going on with the abortion. I mean, it's just, it's sick. It's like we as women have to do everything we can. And I'm like, I'm not tiptoeing anymore. I'm yeah. shouting from the rooftops and I'm shattering glass ceilings as well as you are.
This episode is presented by Sparkling Ice. Turn up summer with Sparkling Ice. They have over 17 anything but subtle flavors, all made with zero sugar and packed with vitamins and antioxidants. Iced tea and lemonade, strawberry watermelon, tropical punch, peach nectarine. Yum. Crank up the flavor. Sparkling Ice. Anything but subtle. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Some things work so well. It's basically magic. Like my favorite highlighters that I'm like, wow, how did you all of a sudden make me look glowing? And you know what else really works, Daddy Gang? Shopify. It is a global commerce platform that helps you sell. I've seen a big difference in my online merch sales. They are especially good at turning browsers into buyers. I can see someone that's been on the site but didn't check out, or someone that checked out and then is revisiting the site. Like, if you want to grow your business, Daddy Gang, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unwell, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/unwell.
Congratulations on your book, How to Be a Boss Bitch.
Thank you.
I mean, I wouldn't expect anything else from you. That is the fucking title, of course, of Christine Quinn's book. How did you decide to write the book?
I decided to write the book because after season one, I was just being myself. I was being my glamorous, fun self. I was building a character. I had so much fun with my fashion, with my attitude. And after Selling Sunset came out, I received a flood of hate, a hurricane that was pouring in. People were saying, like, you're such a horrible person, go die. I received so many, like, so many threats against my own life because I'm like, people think this is real. Reality is just an illusion. And that was a thing that was so hard for me to comprehend because I went into the show, I'm a character. Yes, I'm myself. I'm outspoken. I say what I want. But at the end of the day, it's a show. We all walk in. Like, we're all mic'd up. We know what we're doing, you know? Locations have been permitted for 2.5 weeks prior. It's a show.
Right.
It's a show. People need to realize that. So in addition to the flood of messages that I was receiving that were extremely disturbing, a flood of messages came in from people that understood me. people that were on my side, people that saw a part of themselves in me and resonated with that. And the number one message I received was, how can I be confident? How can I talk back to my boss? How can I set boundaries? How can I say no when we live in a world of constant yes, 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 saying yes to people? People are inclined to be people pleasers. And until you learn to set those boundaries, the most powerful word in the vocabulary of the English language is no. It's the most powerful word. And once people recognize that, that's when you really step into your true power. Because you can say yes to stuff every single day, but you have to set boundaries and realize what's right for you. And no was the most powerful tool I learned along the way. And I wanted to share advice with people in the world on how to be unapologetically the best version of themselves to live the life they deserve.
I remember watching the show, and obviously everyone, you're like, where do they come from? Why are they the way that they are? Mm-hmm. And even everything you just said, like, there's going to be a backstory there,
of course,
right?
Of course.
And so, first of all, I have to also just say congratulations on motherhood. Like, we Thank can't even you. Begin without saying congratulations. He's going to be one.
Yeah. Like, in just a few days.
How has motherhood been?
Motherhood's been great, but you know, my birth was really traumatic. I had an emergency C-section. My water broke. I was rushed to the hospital. It was a horrible situation. The doctors came to my husband and said, you need to choose one right now because we're not sure if we can save both. And so to which he said, you need to save both. Make this happen. So the transition has been great, and I love being a mother, but it made me realize the things that are important in life. And we are only given, we only have time in the world, and that time is so valuable. That time is so valuable. That's why it's important to, you know, disassociate yourself with situations where you don't feel right, where you don't feel like, you know, I don't need to do this. And then a week later, you know, I was pressured into film and I was thrown into production. So then we go into season 4, season finale, where I was wearing the gold dress. Mm-hmm. And that was a week after I had a baby and I had postpartum depression, and they're just piling on. And I thought for one second, I said, literally, can you guys just give me a break after everything I went through? And they showed no sympathy at all.
I remember there were rumors that you faked your pregnancy.
Yeah, and yeah.
Why? Why did people think it was a hoax?
People thought it was a hoax because of the editing of the show. What happened was I filmed a scene with Davina, okay, where her and I were doing yoga. I was actually pregnant in that scene. Mm-hmm. And they choose when they put footage according to their narrative in the show, according to Storyland and Story World. Right. So Davina and I, that was actually the first thing we shot, was me pregnant doing yoga, doing headstands. So the editors cropped me from here up. And then when I was doing yoga inversions, they only showed me from behind. So in Storyland, when you're watching the show, it looks like I had an emergency C-section. And then the next episode, I'm upside down on my head doing yoga. So that's what sparked all of that. And people said, oh my gosh, if you just had an emergency C-section, like, you wouldn't be able to do yoga. I'm like,
now that you're a mother, do you feel like you have a greater appreciation for your own parents?
Yeah, absolutely. My childhood growing up was very sheltered. You know, I came from Texas, and it was just, it's a different world out there. And my parents were trying to protect me. And, you know, there is bad people out there in the world. Like, I get that, you know, say they were doing their best job to protect me, but it felt suffocating to me, to which I left when I was 17 years old, when my parents went to Costco, because it's the only time I knew that they were going to be gone from the house for 2 hours. I packed up and left.
How did growing up in that conservative household affect your childhood?
I would say, well, first of all, you know, I wasn't allowed to eat fast food. I wasn't allowed to have soda, you know, which is why, like, now all I drink is, like, Red Bull, Dr. Peppers, soda, right, like hamburgers, cheeseburgers, because I didn't have that food growing up. But my parents and I have a great relationship and understanding now. They just came from a place of wanting to protect me and wanting to make sure that, you know, I was okay. So looking back, you know, maybe it was for the best, but I had to leave when I had to leave.
you were very open in your book about your mom's health struggles. Yeah. How did that affect you growing up?
My mom's been sick my whole life, and I had to drop out of school because of that, so I could spend more time with her, because we weren't sure, you know, what her health situation was and how long she was going to make it. She had a pulmonary embolism at one point, so we were in the hospital saying goodbye to her. I didn't believe it. I didn't think it was real. I was, you know, probably like 15 at the time. I didn't understand. They pulled me out of school, and my mom tried to homeschool me, but she couldn't, to which they then enrolled me in an alternative school. It initially was a curse to me, because I was like, why am I being punished to be in this alternative school? But it was a blessing in disguise. I was amongst kids that in society terms were outcasts, mm-hmm. you know? These were women who were sex trafficked, who would get picked up by their pimps at 15, 16 years old. They were pregnant, so regular schools in Texas wouldn't allow them to be at school. I had 16-year-old friends of mine that were running drug rings, but you know what? That taught me street smarts and how the world really works, and it was the most eye-opening experience to me. But it's something that shaped me, because now I have the hustle, I have the street smarts, I have everything that I learned that I never knew even existed. So I was able to grow up with a better understanding of how the world worked from being so sheltered.
You wrote in your book that you never graduated high school.
Yes.
And you completed your education in eighth grade.
Yes.
You also write about your interview with Vogue. That's when you kind of announced that information about not graduating high school. And you broke down crying in that interview. What were you feeling at that moment during that interview?
At that moment during the interview, I was overseas and I was doing press for the new season of Selling Sunset and fashion. I was just so grateful to be on with Vogue. But my whole being is being genuine and authentic. And she was listing off my accolades and, you know, how much of an incredible businesswoman I am and how much I've accomplished and achieved. And I'd been living this lie. I felt like I've just been living this lie, because I don't even have a diploma. Like, I don't have a GED. And the emotions just started flooding out of me. And I'm thinking, like, holy shit, even the most waterproof mascara in the world cannot fix the situation right now, which is about to go down. And I started crying, and I said, I want to tell you something that I've never told anyone in the world. Only my husband and my family know this. And I said, I don't even have a GED. I don't have a high school diploma. I have an eighth grade education. I was pulled from school. And after I got off the call, I was like, oh my God, what did I just do? What did I just do? And then I got a flood of messages from people that said, I've always been so embarrassed about my education. I never wanted to admit it. I've lied on my resume for years. It's like a catch-22. It's like you have to have experience to get a job. But how can you get experience if they won't give you the experience? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yes.
So it's just, it's really difficult. And so I opened it up to a whole flood of people that said, if you can do this, I can do this.
That's really cool too, because I think our world is definitely shifting a bit. Like, I know when my parents were like, you have to go to college, like, oh my God, you won't be able to get a job.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like there's been a shift, and I can imagine that people were so grateful that you were vulnerable, because you are a successful woman and you've made such a career for yourself. Have you now come to terms with your lack of education?
100%. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
I feel like if I would have gone to college, I would have maybe found a marketing path, another career path, and I wouldn't have the life that I have today. And it's, people don't understand. It's hard when you're going through it, but everything happens for a reason.
So true.
So that had to happen to me in order for me to be where I am today.
So you moved out of your parents' house at 17, you said?
Yes.
When they were at Costco?
Yes, when they were at Costco, because I was never allowed to leave my house. I was never allowed to go to the movies. I was never allowed to hang out with friends. I was like Rapunzel.
Did you resent them for that at the time?
It was, yeah, I did. And then it was hard for me to understand until I got older. And then I realized it came from a place of love.
Yeah. You move out of your parents' house in Dallas. You got yourself an apartment eventually, a job. You were bartending. You were saving up money. And eventually, you got a sugar daddy.
Yes, I did.
How did dating this older, rich man change how you felt about yourself?
It opened me up to a world that I knew existed. You know, I grew up going into CVS and shoplifting eyeliner and looking at these beautiful women on beautiful magazines. And I said, oh my gosh, like, how do I get on these magazines? This is the most glamorous life. I knew nothing about it. Like, I didn't even know what Roberto Cavalli was, let alone how to spell Roberto, okay? Like, that this is the type of situation I was dealing.
Most people don't, Christine, so don't feel bad.
I was like, couture, 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 couture. It's like, I had no clue, right?
Right, right.
So I was introduced to this man, and he came across my bar, and he was, you know, a very, very, very attractive man. I was 21, I believe, and he was 40. Okay. And beautiful blonde hair, beautiful blue eyes, and he was just so enchanting. But he was, in the best way possible, one of the best things that happened to me, because it opened my eyes to this world which I had been manifesting for so long. I'd been clipping out articles and pictures and travel and luxury and clothes and fashion, and he opened my eyes to all of that.
Can you describe the arrangement between the two of you?
Yeah, absolutely. So him and I lived together. Okay. And I was working as a bartender, and he told me basically that I needed to quit my job so we could travel full time. I needed to quit my job so we could travel. And I wasn't comfortable doing that because that was my stream of income. And sure, he was buying me, you know, all these fabulous bags and shoes and spending, you know, $500,000 here, $500,000 there, going on the Gulfstream, you know, like in a drop of a hat. But I had no money. I had no financial freedom. And that's when I realized, like, oh my gosh, I could be with the most perfect person in the whole entire world, but my love language is freedom because the way I was raised.
Was this a transactional agreement, or was there any type of like romance involved?
No, not at all. Oh, no. Him and I were like an actual couple.
Okay.
I loved him. I really, really, really did. I had told him since I quit my job, I said, can you help me out? Like, yeah. I need to be able to go to Starbucks. And it was a really controlling relationship. He said, you want to go to Starbucks? I'll take you. I never had a credit card. He never gave me money. Like, it was really controlling, to which I said, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Like, I'm living in a beautiful palace, like limestone imported from France, this gorgeous palace. And like, I have everything I want, but I don't have the ability to have my own credit card to go to Starbucks by myself. And even when I said I want a cappuccino, he would come with me and put it on his card. So it was another form of control, which I recognized. And it was really hard for me.
How did the relationship end?
So I would have been set up for life, but I didn't want that. I had bigger goals and aspirations. So I basically said, listen, like, thank you for everything you've done for me, but I have to pursue my dreams, and we're not on the same page. I'm not going to be a housewife. I'm not going to sit into a house and just, like, that's not for me. And that's when I decided to leave. And he was really helpful. I had no money at the time, so he shipped my car out to Los Angeles. So I had, a 2002 like Ford Focus back then. Woo! And it hardly worked. It had like 169,000 miles on it.
I love knowing you drove that car, because I feel like everything about you is expensive, and it like makes you more of like a human to be like, guys, Christine drove a Ford Focus.
Oh, bro, like used, like 1,100,000 miles on it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, this is like the last thing about the sugar daddy. Because I know so many young women are listening. Would you recommend this kind of relationship to someone who thinks they might want a sugar daddy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. I think it's just all about setting boundaries and terms. You have to value yourself, and you have to understand, like, whatever that arrangement may be, Absolutely. I was just not savvy enough to realize the power that I had. Had I been able to ask for an allowance, had I been able to say, listen, you want me to quit my job? Great. Here's my bills. Pay me 10 grand.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I didn't have the power back then. I didn't realize it. You know, over the years, I recognized that. But I might have been in a different situation, but at the end of the day, I still knew that he wanted me to be a housewife. And I want people to know there is no shame in the sugar daddy game. And I am tired of shaming people for that. I'm absolutely sick and tired of it. There's nothing wrong with it. Two consensual parties, they can do whatever they want. We're adults. And so, honestly, that just sickens me.
It annoys me, too, because I'm like, why don't we focus on the guy
yeah.
as opposed to the girl that's, like, working the
yeah,
system?
It's of
like,
course.
Same thing with OnlyFans. Whenever I'm like, wait, why are people like, wow, women are really just, like, degrading themselves. And, like, men are so horny and
seriously.
Cannot control themselves. I'm going to make 50K a month.
I would, too.
Thank you. Men, you are the ones that are just giving up. Fine, sure.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
I agree.
And I have so many people that come to me that are close friends of mine, and they're like, I want to do this OnlyFans thing. You know, I want to do seeking arrangement. Like I don't know what to do. And I'm like, do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
I think the only thing is
don't
like,
be afraid.
Be careful and be safe. And there's certain things that I know that can get like, telling a friend where you're going, meeting in public 100%. For the first time, like making sure when we're saying yes, do it. I know that you're insinuating. It's like you are being so careful. People know where you are. Give your friend your tracking.
Oh,
like, only meet in person
course.
For the first time.
Because
there's things that, I mean, I could do a whole episode on how to be careful with that shit, but you're just saying in general, that kind of dynamic should not be shamed.
100%.
I
agree. Meet someone for coffee. Get to know them. Like, mm-hmm. You have to be safe, especially as women. You just never know.
Yes.
You never know.
Okay. You are the star of a reality TV show. And to set the scene for people, I know there may be some people that haven't fully watched who don't know what Selling Sunset is. It's a reality show created by the same people who created The Hills.
Yes.
And it follows a group of women selling real estate in Los Angeles, California. Were you a fan of reality TV before
Always.
You start? Okay.
My whole entire life.
Okay.
My
that's
whole
what
entire
I was
life. I grew up watching, you know, The Real World, The Kardashians.
Sure. Yes.
You know, VH1, mm-hmm. MTV, you know.
So were you excited to do this show?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, you weren't nervous.
I was the only person that was on board to do the show. I remember everyone was like, we shouldn't do this. It's going to tarnish our reputation. So for me in acting, I loved acting, but I always manifested and always said, all I want to do is just be myself and be on television. That's all I ever wanted.
Right.
So the stars aligned.
When filming, did you have a strategy around the persona that you wanted to create?
Absolutely. Because it's all about being remembered, giving the audience a feeling, whether that is a feeling of power, whether that is a feeling of intrigue, whether that is a feeling of even, you know, hate towards me. I don't care. I will be remembered. And that's my goal the entire time. For my fashion, my lines, everything is completely intentional. Like, this is a show. I'm going to put on a show.
You absolutely put on a show and you absolutely are remembered. You have, what color is your Lamborghini?
Yellow.
Just like your finger. It's like,
yeah.
Everyone knows when Christine arrives. And it's like, I respect you for it because you get a lot of airtime and it's like, no shit, because you're entertaining and you're creating a good vibe for a reality show. How soon into filming?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the producers decided that you would be cast as the show's villain?
Episode one. No, from casting. Literally from casting. But it came from, you know, we interviewed for the show before.
Okay.
So I was already legitimately working at the brokerage for probably, don't quote me, like 4 years at this point. So I was still doing acting and modeling on the side. And that's when we got approached. Every year we do a marketing campaign at the cult, I mean the Oppenheim Group. And we have this big billboard on Sunset every year. And so, you know, you see these beautiful statuesque women and then like, you know, these small boy men, like no one knows what the hell's going on. And it's like, is this an escort agency? Like, is this, like, what is this, you know? So Adam DeVello, who was driving down Sunset, saw the billboard and contacted the agency and said, I want to do a show show about you guys. To which everyone was like, no, absolutely not. We're not doing this. But I was like, guys, we have to be on board. We have to do this. So I was the one from day one that was like rallying the troops. I was like, come on, let's do this. It's going to be great for the broke. I was like, it's going to be great for the brokerage.
My career. It's going to, yeah. And my pleasure and my fun. And I want to put on my outfit. Who's going to film me? Let's go. Exactly. I've been waiting for this moment.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes so much sense. Was there ever a conversation? Because you're like, okay, episode one, they decided. Was mm-hmm. there ever a conversation where they told you you would become the bad guy?
Absolutely, absolutely. So organically working at the office, that was our office. That was our tight-knit girls. We did work in the office every day together. We loved each other. Mm-hmm. You know, we had so much fun. And it was a great relationship. Then cameras got involved. We were approached that it was going to be this women empowerment, women in business, working together in real estate, and then it wasn't that way at all. We were approached that it was going to be this women empowerment, women in business, working together in real estate, and then it wasn't that way at all. It just, it all spiraled because people, like, I'm like, I film a scene and I check out, bon voyage. I don't, you know what I'm saying? Right. I'm able to disassociate mm-hmm. with like filming a scene, okay. being a character, and then leaving the room. There, you know, there's definitely two sides of Christine for sure. There's the one you see on TV and there's the one right now.
Yeah.
So I think the girls along the way had a really hard time because they started thinking it was real. And that's the most dangerous thing.
Like, because I'm asking you, when did they ever acknowledge to you like, hey, you are going to kind of be the villain?
100%. 100%.
Okay, so there was a conversation.
Yes, there was a conversation and they said, you know, but you play it up so well, have fun with it, have fun with it. And okay. I'm thinking in the meantime, like, okay, like, you know, I can have fun with this, sure. However, you know, like, let's be true to what actually happened. Let's not, okay. you know, manipulate and fake storylines.
Okay, got it.
To which is where it really started getting blurry down the road.
You mentioned that the Christine on the show is very different than the one I'm sitting in front of. It's a fun, more like lighthearted version of yourself coming out yeah, right now as you're speaking.
And that's the thing is like, I'm being myself. I have fun with it. You know, I say the things that I normally would in real life. You know, I am funny and silly and goofy, but you only see a small percentage of that because villains can't be relatable.
Right.
So that's where a lot of me is on the editing room floor. You have to understand when we do scenes, yeah. like a lunch scene, even with, you know, whoever it may be on the show, when we're doing a lunch scene, that's captured over 3 hours. You know, we're sitting there for 3 hours and then it's cut down to 38 seconds sometimes.
Quite literally.
So it's like you're not seeing the full context and they intentionally, you know, edit out, you know,
a
things
lot.
That I say that may have, you know, supported my argument and a lot of facts that they don't want to mm-hmm. provide because then that shows me as a vulnerable human, which they don't want to do.
Right. You need to be like Ice Queen.
Yeah.
What is the biggest difference between the Christine Quinn we know on screen versus who you are off camera?
I think the biggest difference is I'm vulnerable. I'm a human. I have feelings, but I'm also really generous. I'm also like really generous with people and I'm loving and I have so much love. People that started fan pages like of me were like, I text them every single day of my life. Like all of my fans have become my best friends. They have my personal cell phone number if they have any problems in their relationships. Like I always said like I would be the greatest lawyer in the whole entire world or the greatest therapist because I feel like I have such good advice, but I like to use my platform to help people and give them advice, mm-hmm. which is exactly why I wanted to write this book.
Yeah, that's interesting because we don't see you giving advice at all on the show
no.
and we don't see that side of you, which yeah. again, I know this is a show, like this is a character.
Yeah.
How does your role on the show affect who you really are?
My role on the show affects who I really am because people take it seriously. Mm-hmm. People take it seriously. And, you know, I went into it thinking, like, okay, people see past this. Like, people are smart, but some people don't. Some people take it, legit, like some people think it's serious. And, you know, it's all fun and games. I'm all down to play ball in fake storyline world and make myself look like a fool. And I don't have the keys to my own listings when permits were pulled 2 weeks prior. Everyone's mic'd up. The doctor's mic'd up. Heather's mic'd up. You know, it's just like you have to understand the stuff that goes into it. And I've fallen on my sword so many times, but through the process of the show and the seasons over the years, it was just like catching a falling knife to try to keep up, because no matter what I did. So when we were filming season 5, my husband and I have been working on a company for a year and a half now called Real Open. And so I told production going into it, I said, listen, I'm leaving the Oppenheim Group. You guys know that. So let's get creative with the storylines and let me talk about my own brokerage. To which they completely edited it out, because that's not a convenient storyline. That's not fun.
No.
So you see the lead up in season 5 where, you know, everyone's like, Christine needs to leave the office. She needs to leave the office. And Jason's like, she hasn't done anything wrong. She hasn't done anything wrong. Right. Insert, you know, insert fake bribery storyline. Aha, we can finally get rid of her, you know, right. Leaving on that note, which really irritated me. And then the scene of me in the office supposed to show up, that didn't happen. I had no idea that was going on until sent me clips and I was horrified.
Everything on TikTok that's trending of like the fake phone calls that, like, you see Jason's screen, it's like on his camera roll and he's like faking a phone call. And so, and to me, like, I'm not surprised. Like, I acknowledge that I'm watching reality scripted television, yeah. Basically. Like, it's yeah. reality, but it's not at all yeah. at the same time.
Yeah.
So that is very interesting. One of your castmates from Selling Sunset this season called you a narcissist and said you are one of the most evil human beings on the planet. Harsh.
Yeah.
Do you believe this person really thinks that about you, or is she just pissed you get more airtime?
I don't think she actually believes that. I really give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Okay. I really don't think she believes that. But I think it's a convenient storyline, and it's yeah. you know what they had to roll with.
I mean, this entire season was about you.
Yeah. Even when I'm not in the room, because
no, yeah, like I was kind of annoyed because, like, as a viewer, I was getting annoyed. I'm like, but she didn't I'm do anything annoyed. This season.
I am a narcissist. Yeah. I'm obsessed with myself. Don't get me wrong, of course. But it's to the point where it's like I'm not even in the room and they're talking about me.
Yeah. Do you think you've ever taken the role of the villain too far?
No. I never think I've taken it too far. I just think that people have to understand the context of the scenes that happen and what really goes on and how much, you know, they take out.
Did you ever watch The Hills?
Of course I did.
Okay. Have you seen Spencer Pratt's, like, TikTok lately?
Of course I have.
It is, like, giving me serotonin. Like, I am obsessed with his TikToks right now because he's like, guys, do you remember when I was the most hated guy in the yeah. world, basically, with Heidi? Let me expose every single episode of how they cut it. They're like, do you hear me in the club? Did you ever see my face in the club that
yes,
night? No, because they pulled that audio from a different club night and pretended I was cheating on Heidi. It's like, it's very...
Even birthday parties. They staged birthday parties.
Yes.
And made it look like it was other events.
And
yeah,
so it's like,
absolutely.
The persona you're putting on the show, I think, is fucking brilliant because you're the memorable one. You're coming off at times like wild and bitchy and aggressive. We're all fucking talking about you. I can't sometimes remember the other girls' names.
I don't even know who they are. I don't even know their names either.
Okay. What does your husband think about the character you play?
He loves it. He really does, because he knows who I am at the end of the day. And he knows everything that I do is very intentional. Mm-hmm. Very intentional. It's like I go to work. So I never, ever, ever wear makeup. Ever. Unless I'm filming.
How fucking often do you guys have to get in these crazy outfits, like incredible outfits, but like crazy intense
yeah.
over the top mm-hmm. outfits and makeup and glam and all the things?
Yeah. So we film when we're filming the show probably 5 to 7 days a week.
Okay.
Sometimes we film 2 to 3 scenes a day. So it's really intensive. You know, I'll wake up at 5 a.m., get glam ready. I have to have 3 outfits in my car to change, to go to different scenes, change my hair. Sometimes for continuity purposes, I'll have to put my hair back in a pony or back down. So people don't realize how hard it is to shoot a show, because we shot season 5 in 1 month, season 4 in 1 month. So
damn.
We shoot them back to back. So it's like a very, very, very quick turnaround.
Has there been an instance where you did something to one of your castmates, like you now consider like, okay, I fucked up. I shouldn't have done that. That was like a little unwarranted.
No. No, I never feel that way because that would be against everything. No, I say everything what I mean. It may hurt people's feelings in the process, but it's my truth. And I'm always going to speak my truth and how I feel.
Are you in control of your character's narrative, or is there a writer's room like popping off with villain ideas for Christine this season?
There is, from what I've been told, I've been into the offices, there are 6 full-time storyboarders. To what they do is they write the storylines, mm-hmm. and depending on how things change in real world in our lives, they can kind of rotate the storylines. But we have 6 full-time storyboarders who create narratives.
Who gets paid most on the show?
Me.
Really?
There's a tier.
Can you tell us the tier?
Yeah, there's 3 tiers.
Okay, tell us the tiers.
I'm going to get sued after this. I don't care. Sue me. After me. You can't afford my lawyers.
Okay, tiers.
There's 3 different tiers.
Okay.
I get paid the most.
Wow.
Amongst Jason as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I was going to say, does the villain get like a pot-stirring bonus? Apparently, yes.
Well, I mean, but that wasn't the decision of production or anything like that. That was me with my entertainment attorney, you know, basically saying this is my value. And I think it's all about recognizing your worth.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's also cool because you had said at the beginning of this interview, you're like, I want to help people when they're like, how do I go in and talk to my boss? I mean, you fucking walked on the show and you're like advocating for yourself and you're getting paid the most.
Yeah.
Seems like you're doing pretty well.
I mean, everyone has to realize their worth.
Yeah.
And I think when everyone is on the same page. So when we were filming the show, we were all trying to band together. Mm-hmm. And I said, listen, guys, if we're going to do this and we're all going to make the same amount of money, we all have to band together. So when we went into the show, we all have separate lawyers. Mm-hmm. The majority of the cast is represented by one lawyer. But obviously, I had to find my own entertainment attorney and do my own thing.
Smart.
So, you know, they told us that there's tiers. And I was the one who came to the whole entire cast and said, listen, if we need to get paid what I believe we all deserve as a whole, because we are all equals, we need to band together and be on the same page. But it didn't work. And some people were eager to sign their contracts right away, which immediately tiered them in a different group. So I was the last one actually to sign my contract. So that was negotiated. And
do you renegotiate every season?
We try to. For the first few seasons, the first 2 seasons, we were stuck in a bracket, mm-hmm. Which the episodic rate didn't even cover glam for a day. Yeah. So people think, oh my gosh, they must be making so much money from the show. No. But the money comes from the production company. They allocate the budget to us.
Like I said to you at the beginning of this episode, you are the most talked about, the most memorable, the wildest outfits. I mean, you're doing exactly what reality television calls for.
Yeah.
And so when people, I know people are going to be like, oh my God, because people, I was on a live show and I was like, ooh, maybe I'll have Christine Quinn on. And so many people were like, fuck yes. And other people were like, fuck that bitch. And I'm like, if you can be that polarizing, you're doing something right.
Exactly. Like, and 1,000%. That was my main goal.
Do you feel the producers are constantly pushing there to be tension and drama between you and
absolutely,
the girls?
Absolutely, absolutely. What they do is they take the girls, first of all, they separate us. We come to a scene and they want everything to be, I can't even say the word without laughing, organic. Okay.
He's like tweaking.
They want everything to be organic. That's cute. Okay.
Like, this is a scripted show, basically.
They literally hold us away from each other. Like, Chelsea and I are best friends. Vanessa and I are best friends. So we show up to set, and I'm so excited. I'm like, oh my God, Chelsea, girl, like, Vanessa, I love you. And they're like, no, hold us. They separate us in different rooms, and then they wait until we're ready to film, and they send us in. But in the meantime, they'll have someone say, oh my gosh, you know, Christine just said this about you in a previous scene. And they'll come to me and say, oh, Chelsea said this about you in a previous scene. So they set up these scenarios which, you know, instigate our emotions intentionally. But I've been doing the show for years. I'm on 5 seasons, so I know how it works. I don't take anything they say to heart.
Totally.
But new girls coming in do. And so I say, you know, hey, if you have any problems after the scene, call me. I'll clarify anything with you. But they do everything they can to amp the girls up, to rile them up. It is a male-dominated industry in the production field to which they manipulate women. They harass them. They just mentally torture and intimidate them.
Have you ever rejected any scripted moments or scenes for the show? Yes,
absolutely.
Can you tell us?
Absolutely. There's been times where we have been at a dinner, mm-hmm. at a lunch, where, you know, like I said, we film for 3 hours. So they'll say, you know, if you say this word, if you say this sentence, we'll let you leave. And so after 3 hours, we're just like, oh my God, it comes to a point where it's like, fine, I'll say that. I don't care, you right. know? So it's the intimidation tactics. But I wanna clarify here. It's Adam DeVello. Adam DeVello is the one who owns the production company, which is the same one who did The Hills and made Heidi and Spencer look like they were crazy. You know, it's all dependent on who's producing the show.
Yeah.
And we have to look at what Adam DeVello has done as a whole, as a human being, mm-hmm. As, you know, the person that he is. I mean, yeah. talk about The Hills. You know, there's been complaints filed against him, mm-hmm. multiple complaints. And it's been sick. He actually told me to go fall down the stairs and kill myself at one point.
Why did he say that? In what context?
In the context of me being too honest. That wasn't the first complaint I filed against him. There was another complaint to where he, to this day, cannot actually step foot on set with any of the women in the office because of misconduct. It was extremely terrifying when, you know, I mean he's screaming in my face, and it was horrifying.
When you say he's screaming at you for being too honest, like what does that mean?
Basically, I did an interview and okay. you know, I said, like, no, here's what really happened, to which he was threatening me and okay. yelling at me, and you know, there was other people around, there were witnesses to this. He basically berated me for being too honest. And I said, this is my real life and this didn't happen and you know this. To which then he was screaming and yelling at me, and he said, quote, go fall down the stairs and kill yourself. In addition to that, there was, I don't want to get too much into it, but there was inappropriate sexual misconduct. And Heidi filed a claim as well against him. And people, like, this stuff does go on. This stuff does go on. And ever since then, he's never been allowed to step foot with any of the women on set because of it. And he has shown retaliatory behavior towards me ever since. But even before that, you know, he had his cast. He knew who his villain was going to be. And
it's sad because he's rewarded by, like, he knows the format of how to make a good reality yeah. television show, which is to basically take anything someone says and find a way to spin it to make it as drama filled as possible. And it's sick because we all tune in because it's so drama filled. And yet hearing you talk about this, no one watching Selling Sunset knows this was going on.
Can I show you something?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So press screeners get sent all around town, usually 2 to 3 weeks prior before the show is launched, so that press outlets can have articles ready to go about the show. They're privy to the information and the storylines. So this was sent my way from a member of the press. Now, you're going to see clips and the magic that they can do. My screen is so fingerprinty. All right. Gloves.
Okay.
So this was originally what was in the show.
You said comments about Chriselle sleeping with Jason when she was still married, and you know that's bullshit.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah, I did say that. That's true.
So that's when I remember that scene. You guys are talking about...
Heather never even brought that up in the scene.
So you're saying when you said, oh yeah, I did say that, that's true.
That was in addition to this, the actual conversation, which I will show you now.
You said he's always had good taste in women, but I guess that's... you know, that's not true anymore.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah, I did say that. That's true.
So you see the two scenes. And the first scene that they were about to send out to the entire world accused me of confirming infidelity, which was dubbed over by production. Heather never said that with me. That never happened in the conversation.
So that means that though Heather agreed to go in and VO.
I don't know exactly what happened, but you have to understand they have an archive of every right. word we've ever said, every cadence we've ever said it. They can piece it together.
So to confirm to anyone that's confused what just happened, the first scene we watched, which I remember, Heather is talking to you and basically says, you said that Chrishell cheated on her husband with Jason. And you then respond, yeah, I did say that.
Yeah, I did say that. It's completely out of context.
And it comes off, I remember watching it, very sinister, very like, oh, fuck. Okay, that's a big allegation to accuse a woman of cheating on her husband. We then just watched the original and she's saying to you, oh, yeah, that you had said, like, you know, he used to have really good taste in women, maybe not so much anymore. And you're like, haha, yeah. That's a summation of everything we've been talking about. Yeah. Like, let me be so clear. The one they aired is a way better storyline.
Thank God.
Way better storyline. But this also shows how different you are in that moment where yeah. it's like you're being like a little like, okay, bitchy, like, okay, yeah, he used to have good taste.
It's hilarious. So I was like, yeah, he used to have good taste in women until now. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did say that. That's hilarious.
You said the initial show at the beginning of this, you mm-hmm. said the initial show was supposed to be about badass women empowerment. Do you think the show could have been successful without all the drama?
I think the show could have been successful without the production company to which it was run by. Absolutely. I think it would have been so inspirational. And I think we could have played along with the drama. But when we're working with people telling us what to do, how to say, even wardrobe notes, you know, and you know, push up your cleavage and, you know, wear, like, I have gotten into so many fights because I wanted, you will never see me, I don't think, in a two-piece bathing suit ever on the show. I only wear one-piece bathing suits. And that's not because I don't feel comfortable. It's just because it's my choice and I don't want people criticizing my body. You know, whatever I do, I'm always criticized. Like, she's too fat, she's too skinny, she's too fake, she's too this, like, whatever. And so I wanted to wear a one-piece bathing suit, to which, you know, that was even a huge thing. They didn't want me wearing that. They told me to change clothes. And I was like, I'm absolutely not changing my wardrobe. This is what I'm comfortable in. So it was just, it's hard. You really can't win.
That is fucked up. You said, you know, people are commenting on you. Do the comments get to you?
No. They used to. It was really hard. Like, it was really hard. Season one was probably the hardest for me. It's like, yeah, you can receive like so many death threats and go fuck yourself and go kill yourself. Like, yeah, like it's a flood of them. And it wasn't even that. I had stalkers. I was harassed. People found my address. They were sending me letters. You know, my house was broken into a few weeks ago. You know, it's just like, this is real. The comments that were the hardest was after the pregnancy, to which they intentionally, you know, edited in chronological order that wasn't correct. Yeah. So that's what started a whirlwind of press. Like, you know, I hope you and your baby go die. You shouldn't even be a mother. You know, you're such a horrible person. Go kill yourself. Like, it was stuff like that. That's the stuff that got to me, is like, when you're bringing my family into it. Mm-hmm. Like, my family doesn't need to be involved in this.
People online taking the production to face value of like, wow, this girl's a fucking crazy bitch. And you're like, please watch this edit. Yeah. I'm going to just show you how, like, yeah, this is a show. It's like you're watching a movie.
Yeah.
When people almost like confuse when they see like the villain from a movie and they're like, you're a bad person. And yeah, it's like, sweetie, that was my line. Okay. And so it's like almost flooding into your real life, which must be exhausting.
Yeah. And I learned that, you know, in the process of writing my book, I said, I have to tell my own narrative. And mm-hmm. if I don't tell my story, someone else will write it for me. And that's why I put the book out. And I said, you want to know everything about me? Here you go. So that was me taking my own power back.
Yeah.
And do I think I'm going to get, you know, slapped with a lawsuit and a letter, sure, have fun. But my fucking lawyers, like, you can't afford them. And I have all the money in the world.
Christine Quinn, thank you so much for coming on Call Her Daddy, giving us the tea, giving us the behind the scenes. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun. I love you.
Director's cut. For all of you Selling Sunset junkies, I wanted to include some bonus content for your pleasure. Christine spills all the fucking tea. Get your fix here. Enjoy. Is anyone actually selling homes? Or, like, this is a show of, like, do you guys sell homes?
Do I? I personally you sell
do,
homes.
But do people actually sell homes at the company?
No.
Are you saying that because you're like, they can't sell homes? Or you're like, but people actually are real estate brokers.
People are,
people
okay.
didn't believe that.
People actually are real estate brokers okay. and license it. They do. They are licensed agents.
Like those bitches don't sell
However,
shit.
Mary legitimately is selling houses mm-hmm. and working. She has been the hardest worker from day one. She really, really has. Jason okay. took her under her wing, and her and Jason crush it. Her and Jason crush it. They do.
What is the most manufactured drama you've been involved in for the show?
The most manufactured drama I've been in for the show was the season. The season where this fake storyline comes about, where first it's an associate of Christine who contacted a client, then it's Christine contacted a client, then there's no client. There's right. there's no receipts. There's nothing of this matter. This didn't happen. I didn't bribe a client. Absolutely not. For $5,000, they think I'm fucking poor. Like, literally, like, my manicure costs more than that. I'm like, if I'm going to bribe someone, it's not going to be for $5,000. Like, what am I, a peasant?
Okay, so to give people context, yeah, the storyline is that Christine went behind her other coworker's back and bribed a client $5,000 to switch from the other coworker to work with her.
Which is just ridiculous, because you have to look at the timing of this. I had already started my brokerage,
right.
my other brokerage, so I actually wasn't even working at the Oppenheim Group. I was working for my brokerage.
Right, okay.
So why would I give money to the cult when I have my own business?
It all makes sense now. You recently started your own real estate group.
Yeah.
And they needed you to look like, because at the end of the season, it ends and it looks like you're getting fired.
Right, of course. To which the scene, I didn't even know right. that scene was happening. No right. one called me to even do that scene.
So to confirm, you never got fired?
No, I never got fired. No, of course not. I terminated my contract on my own free will okay. after we launched the brokerage, because I can't be licensed in two different brokerages. Right. So I had to terminate my contract.
I was like, a lot of people keep calling you like a liar. And so I was like, trying to Google shit. I'm like, what the fuck has she lied about? And so the one thing about the COVID test, and everyone's like, she lied about COVID.
I didn't lie about COVID. I did test positive for COVID. So 2 days before the reunion, I was feeling really, really, really crummy.
Yeah.
So I got a COVID test from my own doctor yeah. because I had a commercial shoot coming up, mm-hmm. which had been booked for 3 months. So I was like, I need to make sure I'm safe. Like, I was ready for the reunion.
I thought you like were posting about like your diamonds and shit. Like, you were intending to go, right?
I was ready. I had my dresses ready to go. Like I was so excited. For once, I actually felt like I could own this reunion. Like, I came with receipts. I was ready to right. fuck shit up. I was ready to disrupt that fucking reunion and serve. But I fell really, really, really sick. I'm vaccinated, yeah. but I still tested positive. After I tested positive, I told them. And, you know, I said, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm positive. I'm sick. I can't come to the reunion. And I sent this message to them at 7 in the morning. And after I sent the message to them at 7 in the morning, it said, I'm so sick. I'm going back to bed. I woke up at 3:50. I woke up at 3:50, and I was so sick, and I was in bed. And then I started feeling better. And I knew that 2 days later, I had this campaign, which I had to do. So they tested me the night before the campaign. I was negative. And then they tested me that morning on set just to make sure I was cleared to go on set. We followed all protocol. It was shot outside. Yeah. We were completely fine. But like, I was ready to go. Do I think actual resolution would have happened from the reunion? No, absolutely right. not.
If you could go back and redo your relationship with one of the women, who would it be?
It would be Heather. It would be Heather. Mary and I were, you know, we were close in proximity. Mm-hmm. We lived together. But Heather and I lived together as well. I had a 2-bedroom apartment, and Mary at the time broke up with her boyfriend. So she was living with me. Her and Romaine were both living with me, and we were having so much fun. Yeah. But Heather and I, you know, we had this really great relationship, and I felt like she was my sister. I knew so much about her in the first, like, 30 minutes sitting down on the couch talking with her than I ever knew about Mary. So I feel like if there's anyone I want to reach out to, it's Heather.
She seems like a really genuine, amazing person.
She is. But the problem is, you know, she's like a Chick-fil-A waffle fry. You know, she waffles around, and, you know, she listens to what other people say. You know, she says this thing, that thing, you know. And she said, she did an interview, and she's like, I wish Christine would have came to the reunion so we could have hashed that out. And I'm like, honey, I have a phone. I have 8 phones, actually. Hey. Call me on one of my lines. Like call me on my landline, my business line, my cell phone. Like call me on any phone, and we can hash this out. It doesn't have to be done over a reunion, you know? And so I think that's where the girls, like, aren't able to disassociate themselves from the show. Like, mm-hmm. It goes both ways. You can just give me a phone call, and I would give her a phone call as well. And I think, like, our relationship could be salvaged. I really do, because like, Heather and I, we're so close.
Yeah. Who has hurt you the most out of the cast?
Seashells.
Wait, who is Seashells?
Seashells.
Is that Chriselle?
Seashells.
I don't know. I think you're saying Chriselle, but is that your nickname for her? Yeah, is that a nickname that everyone knows? Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. Do they ever say that on the show?
No, but I do. No. I just feel like she came into the office and immediately, you know, the girls and I, we had no problems. But because, you know, she didn't like me and I was a threat in her mind, she turned all the girls against me. And that's really where that came from.
Yeah, you guys have, like, hated each other. And to clarify, that's not just on-screen camera beef. Like, you guys in real life just don't get along.
I never see her, honestly. Yeah. And I don't have any hate or ill will towards her at all. You know, she's the one who's instigated everything. You know, she does interviews about me all day long. I never even mention her name. Like, I even forget. I can't keep up who she's dating. It's like, first it's this and then it's that. I can't keep up with the Kardashians, let alone how am I supposed to keep up with all of her relationships. I don't know anything about her. But her and I never talk. She's been very vocal. And I don't do that. I don't throw people under the bus in press interviews and talk about them. Like, every interview that I do is about myself, my business, my work, my goals, my aspirations. So,
but also, and that's what, like, I remember something happened in the season, and someone was like, yeah, but you did mention me. And it's like, isn't that your guys' job? I'm sitting here and asking about these people. Like, people, you guys have to talk about the show.
Yeah, of course.
So you're going to naturally have to comment, unless you're like, no comment. But your guys' job is to keep the show's name running and keep it having energy.
Of course.
I just have to personally ask you, like, I was watching with my boyfriend this season. He would, like, walk in and out, and it was Chriselle and Jason. And my boyfriend walked in and he was like, oh, that's a fake relationship. And I was like, what? And my boyfriend's a producer. And he was like, that girl is, like, disgusted. Yeah. She, like, can barely, like, kiss him. Like, she keeps, like, she's, like, immediately pulling away.
It comes off on camera. It's, like, Stockholm syndrome.
It's really bad. And people on TikTok are, like, there's zero chemistry.
Absolutely.
And every time he's, like, going to touch her, she's, like,
I know.
What did you think? Do you think it was fake?
She's, like, rubbing her bald head. I think it was opportunistic. I think, you know, it was a great storyline. Mm-hmm. I think that Jason did have genuine feelings for her. Do I think that she had genuine feelings for him? No. And but I have seen Jason, and I saw a different side of him. You know, I really, really did. He seemed happy and in love, but it was one-sided, in my opinion. I've only seen them together twice, which was once at my broker's event, where I was wearing the black dress. Mm-hmm. And even then, I could tell she was really uncomfortable, you know, and she didn't want. But Jason, like, had genuine feelings to her. Jason was like... It was kept, like, I saw the chemistry that Jason, you know,
really liked her,
like, radiated towards her.
Do you watch the show?
No,
You don't?
I've only seen seasons 1 through 3.
Okay.
And then I stopped watching it because I realized what actually happened in real life is not what I'm watching on television.
Right.
So season 4 and 5, I have my assistant watch and she'll flag me clips and send me over, to which I found out about this, you know, fake storyline of the bribery and the fake storyline of this and that. You know, I can't watch it because I know my reality. I know my truth. I know what we shot. And so I'm comfortable. I can sleep at night knowing what actually really happened. And the rest of the world that watches it, I know people are smart.
Yeah. You and your coworker, Emma, dated the same guy at different times. He proposed to her and you claimed he also proposed to you at one point. Your castmate said you lied about being engaged to him. Was that whole storyline made up or is that real that you guys
got engaged? So we were going into season 4 and typically the way that they do it is they bring in a new character every season, like usually 1 or 2. So we were getting to a point where actually like we were all getting along. Chriselle and I, you know, seemed to have, you know, everything was like the air was cleared. We were in a good position. We were in a good spot. All the girls and I were getting along really well. But that's not fun for TV. So they decided to cast someone intentionally to shake things up and have a different storyline. So that storyline was the background of, you know, someone dating my ex. Mm-hmm. And I caught them together. And that was the most horrifying moment of my entire life. He was at my house the night prior. He spent the night. He told me he had to leave and go meet his gardeners. So I said, well, why don't we just go to brunch? Come to brunch. And he's like, no, I can't. I have to meet my gardener. So I said, okay, fine. I'll call another friend. So I called my girlfriend who works at the, I believe, CAA building. Mm-hmm. And there's a cafe there. There's a gym there and everything. So I picked her up because she's an agent. She works there. So I went to go pick her up. We had lunch, come back, drop her off. And who do I see other than my ex and this girl holding hands? I was in complete shock. I was like, oh, really? I thought you were with the gardeners today. Like, really? I was so shocked and horrified. And it was just disgusting. And my friend was just like horrified. And they were walking down the street and he's like, no, just ignore her. So I pulled my car next to her car and she rolled up the window and she wouldn't talk to me. But I said, honey, I work at the Oppenheim Group. My email's on the website. My cell phone's on the website. You give me a call. I will show you any receipts you want to see. Last night, he was at my house fucking me. Okay? So if you're going to tell me that you didn't know about me, you are a complete liar.
You recently started your own real estate group.
Yeah.
Are you going to be on next season of Selling Sunset?
You know, the thing is like I love the show and I always want to be a part of a show, period. I love being on television.
Yeah.
I don't know what my future looks like in terms of Selling Sunset, but they have reached out to me and want to get creative in Storyland world. And, you know, I told them, I made it very clear. I said, I filmed last season under the intention that we were going to go along with me starting my own brokerage.
Right.
And you made me look like a fool. You made me look like you made, you know, and it's one thing, like I said, to do things for TV and have fun with it. But when you're accusing me of criminal misconduct, which is actually a criminal tort, that draws the line for me. That draws the line for me because that's not stuff I participate in.
Also, that makes you like that's fucked up for your career as a real estate agent.
But people are smart.
Right.
People are smart.
Right. Like that's on a reality show.
Yeah.
Like people I know what she's smart. Like when she shows up to a fucking listing and like how she sells a house.
People are smart.
That's, I mean, I can pitch the version of what I think it should be. It should be you have your new agency.
Yeah.
And naturally you're going to roll up and see these women at listings and you're going to basically be like, oh, we're basically competing.
Yeah.
In moment. I mean, that's honestly a better fucking show now.
That would be an amazing storyline.
Yeah.
And like, I want to pull Chelsea to my side.
Yep.
You know, I want to pull Vanessa to my side, you know, and I'm excited about that. So whatever that may be, you know, everyone's like, would you do the Housewives? Would you do this? Would you do that? And I'm like, honestly, I would just love to have my own television show on Hulu and Like, I have a group of women agents that I've hired. So right. I really started an empire. This is just the beginning. And like, I would love to have my own show.
One of my last questions also about the production, when you mentioned how basically like fucking wild and corrupt this production process is, do you think it's so toxic that like you would consider for your mental health stepping away from this type of environment?
It's funny. It's funny. Once the show stopped and, you know, my brokerage, which we've been working on for a year and a half, once we launched that and I terminated my contract with the Oppenheim Group, I mean, that's when the toxicity was cut out of my life. Like, I have $60 million in listings right now, in signed contracts. And it was all because I cut them out of my life. And it's like, you are the sum of five. You are the sum of the five people that surround you. And if you have people who aren't rooting for you, who aren't on your side, who aren't on your team, those people are not meant to be in your life. They will bring you down. They will bring you down. They will wear on your energy and it will affect your business.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when I realized no matter what I did, no matter what I said, you know, there was in season three, I realized I can't win.
Yeah.
There was a time where I was actually talking about Mary in a scene and I watched my mouth say Amanza and I didn't say Amanza. And that's when I was like, what Wizard of Oz shit am I up against? Even the office scene when Mary got promoted, that was the best day we ever had together. We were so excited. We had so much fun.
Right.
And it didn't happen that way on camera. Like, we were all hugging each other. I was like, oh my God, Mary, I'm so happy for you. We were all getting along. It was great. But the producers told me to keep walking out of the office. I walked out of the office probably like 16 times. And they were like, no, no smile, no wave, no smile, no wave. But like, we're prisoners.
Right.
We can't leave until like they get what they want. And so they just needed a shot of me walking out of the office, not smiling, not looking back at anyone. And I just was like,
fuck it.
I just want to go home. I don't want to be here for 4 hours walking in and out of the office. So that was actually like a really fun day. And they edited it out to make it look like I was just, even if you don't say something, it's edited down to an eye roll. But all reality television is not like this. It's just this production company is a monster.